The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We welcome you back. Second half of the show is live and underway, and it has been said a few times, and most recently by our next guest. This is a big week. Big week. Next couple weeks are going to be critical for college football. And with that, we bring in Ralph Russo from the AP, who covers the sport. Ralph, thank you, and it's always good to have you back on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me, Paul.
So, we know it's crunch time. All the cliches that you could possibly put into a pot have been uttered by conference commissioners and administrators. So, tell us where we are right now and what's about to unfold.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting week because I think this is a week for plans to be made. I think the the ACC will likely have a plan in place for what its season will look like. We're thinking something like 11 games, 10 conference games. The big headline there from last week is that Notre Dame, there's a good chance Notre Dame may very well be a part of the ACC. The Pac-12 sort of has said that it will get back to us by the end of the month, and that would be Friday with its schedule. I could see the Big Ten and the SEC doing something this week to sort of say, okay, this is what we're looking at if and when we do play. Either of those conferences might linger into early next week. The Big 12 is a little more open-ended. They seem to be plowing forward with, like, we're just going to try to play them all, and we're not going to really change anything. So I expect to hear from them. So this week and maybe early next week is about laying plans. And then after that, it's about, can those plans be executed? And there's not a lot of control that the folks in college sports have over that other than trying to get their programs up and running, practices going, regular football practice, and can you sustain your programs? Will you be able to continue running your programs during a pandemic? And that will be what we'll find out over the next few weeks after that. So this week is about making plans. And then the week, you know, after that or two is about seeing if those plans can actually be executed.
Yeah, not to be cynical, but what have all these people been doing for the last 3 months?
Well, so I mean, listen, there is an aspect to the idea of let's buy time. I think buying time is probably a pretty good idea in a situation that has evolved so quickly, right? It's been hard to, they want as much information as possible to figure out exactly if they're going to be able to play and how they're going to be able to play. I must admit, they probably bought a little more time than I thought. I think if you would have gone back to the spring and threw some truth serum into people, I think they probably would have said we really would have liked to have some things hammered out or have a pretty good idea of what we're doing by June-ish. Now we're looking at entering August and still sort of crossing our fingers and hoping for the best. But there's a lot of money on the line. So the longer you can kick the can down the road, you will keep kicking the can down the road until there is neither can to kick or road to kick it down. And that's where they are right now. They're just trying to keep kicking it and keep the thing in play that they can't have a season before, you know, it's taken away from them.
And Ralph, listen, that is perfectly understandable. I mean, there's no reasonable person involved in big time college athletics that wants to give up. But what are the biggest challenges right now? And I know we're talking about five separate entities that told us all spring how they were being collaborative, which clearly they're not.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting piece of this, right? How we're all in this together. And now they're all sort of doing their own thing. And again, I think when you're in sort of survival mode, maybe that's the way you have to do. So Paul, you know, I think the NCAA has gotten hammered. I think a lot of times the conference commissioners have gotten hammered. There's been this call for more leadership in college sports, and there's a leadership vacuum, and there's a disparate interest between FBS and the rest of college sports. And I think all those things are true, but I must admit I find myself feeling a little sympathetic for the folks involved here because they can't control the pandemic. And ultimately, what we would hopeful, what would be the process that should be going on is the pandemic gets under control, and then you figure out a way to play within that pandemic. But the pandemic's not really under control, so now they're trying to figure out a way to play in an out-of-control pandemic, which is just simply much tougher. Everything is connected. I've tried to sort of get that message across, because when I talk to epidemiologists and people within college sports, you hear that message. Everything is connected. We can't just... college sports is not going on within a bubble like the NBA and the NHL. So it has to exist in the rest of this, in the rest of the community, in the rest of the states, in the country. And the country right now is having a really hard time dealing with the pandemic.
Let's get inside the sports for a second. Ralph, you work for the AP, and the biggest story in sports today has been Major League Baseball. And it's hard to guess where it's going. And I know everyone in college athletics acts like nothing really affects them. The Ivy League didn't affect them, although the Big Ten the next day changed course. But every commissioner, every person with whom you speak, and we do as well, say we're watching to see how everyone else does. Which brings me to the question of the day: what impact, if any, does the Marlins mess have on college football?
So hey, maybe it could be a good thing, right? Maybe if the MLB respond, or MLB's protocols kick in well, and they have this disruption. Everybody in college football agrees that there will be some disruptions. It's just sort of a matter of how many and how you respond. So maybe if MLB deals with this, and the Marlins are up and running again in a couple of days, and there hasn't been that many missed games, and then we go merrily on into the rest of the baseball season, it goes pretty well. Maybe that's a data point, right? I'm talking to commissioners and ADs today. Well, that's a good data point, right? Something we can learn from, and how we can sort of manage disruptions and get past them and move on. I think so. If it's a singular event that gets moved past, maybe it's an encouraging thing. I think, though, listen, there's a couple of things. It's optics, right? I mean, I think that there is still an optics piece of this, of if the professionals can't pull it off, and if the professionals are sort of putting players are in harm's way, that's one thing. To do it with unpaid amateurs, college students, is another thing. And I also think there is, again, the sobering reality of college football is not operating in a bubble. I don't know how many players they have on these major league teams these days with the virus. I think it's up to about 40 or 50. They have a pool, right? But if a pool of major league players can't avoid an outbreak, how does double that number of football players who are playing a contact sport? How do we manage to avoid outbreaks in that sport? So I think that's sort of the sobering part of, you know, again, looking at, boy, if baseball can't handle it, how are we going to handle it? Another piece of it is, baseball's got a lot more money and is testing far more often than colleges will be.
Is there, or what is the going to be the tipping point, do you think, Ralph, that where football says we are going to play, or we're going to quit acting like we have this thing figured out and finally throw in the towel? And when do you think that would come?
You know, Paul, I keep wondering if that exists. I made the analogy the other day that, like, have you ever watched your team is at like the 3-yard line, third, first and goal, and they just run it up the middle into like an 11-man box 4 straight times, and you're sitting there going like, what are you doing? Like, there's nothing there. And maybe they do manage to like just and push enough to get the ball across the goal line on fourth and goal. And that's what I kind of feel like college sports is doing now. Like, I don't know what the tipping point is. Maybe at a certain point the case levels across the nation just look too bad and somebody steps in. And they are being advised by experts and doctors and epidemiologists, and people just step in and say, listen, the numbers are too bad. We can't do this. But part of me just feels like they're just sort of lowering their heads, or maybe turn around, handing it to the fullback, lowering the head, and just trying to get those last 3 yards any way they can, even if they get them like 7 inches at a time.
But, Ralph, I mean, we've all read about numbers, Clemson, LSU. I mean, I've heard there's a school out there that has 40, 50, maybe 60 positive cases. It doesn't seem like there is a number that really seems to affect these people, is there?
Well, and again, then it becomes a little different now. I will say this, and we talk about tipping point. It becomes a little different now because if you have to start shutting down, they're going to start practicing next week.
Right.
And the NCAA says you need 29 full days of practice to play before you play a game. And if you start shutting down practices, that means you have to now delay your season. So that could be the trigger point of if you start, okay, we have to delay, and now we have to delay again, and we have to delay again. So I don't know what the exact number is that shuts down teams, but I guess what I keep coming back to is if you're constantly shutting things down, if this team is shut down this X week, and then the next week it's another team, and the next week it's another team, at a certain point, like, what are we doing? Like, what kind of a legitimate season are you having? So I don't know if there's a specific, like, hey, this is too much, this is too many cases, or this is too many disruptions. But I guess my bigger concern, or what I'm most interested in, is I think that's what they're going to try to find out. Like, I think that they're going to plow ahead, as I said before, and we're going to find out what that is.
Do you sense, because right now you're right, I mean, it, you can't talk to an AD in this country who's not playing, and even in most parts of the country, not all, talking about fans, commissioners aren't far behind. I mean, do you think there's anyone in this ecosystem who is going to be heard with a different tune and could stop the sport? I mean, I don't know who it is. I'm just curious if you think there's somebody out there.
Well, I think it might be, it has to be an outside voice. And again, you have some experts and doctors and epidemiologists in here in the ecosystem or on the peripheral of the ecosystem. But here's what I would say to that, Paul. So last week there was a board of governors meeting for the NCAA, and there's been a lot of talk about how the NCAA needs to lead, right? So there was some thought that the president might lead. And by lead, they would say, we're going to cancel fall championships. Now, that's not canceling football, and that's not canceling regular season. But when you do that, you send a statement to say, listen, we don't think this is going to work. We're going to put our foot down, right? So that would be some leadership, right? Except that the membership basically said, no, don't do that. Give us more time. So you want leadership on one hand, and everybody within college sports complains about NCAA leadership, but if you don't lead the way we want you to lead, we're going to tell you, please don't do that. So that's where we are now.
Which is exactly where I'm going. I mean, do you think Mark Emmert could pull the shocker of the year in show leadership? And you know, really, they don't have to follow him, but he is the president of the NCAA.
That would be pretty shocking, and I do think it could come to that. Listen, I think it's not just Emmert, it's the college president. I do think that a certain degree, college presidents will have to make the final call. So when you talk about who's going to put their foot down or who's going to have the final say, you know, really that's who's going to have the final say. And college presidents are not a group that tends to be a group that likes to take a lot of high risks. They have a mission that is beyond just running a football program or a basketball program, and I think to a certain degree, maybe that is the space. Sometime within the next month or so, there's another Board of Governors meeting on August 4th. Again, unless things get really wacky in the next week or so, I don't assume that they're going to pull the plug on fall championships. Again, they can't stop football, but they can do some things to sort of signal, like, we don't think this is the way to go. You guys can do it if you want, but you're not getting our endorsement. And then you start wondering if it becomes campus to campus and conference to conference, and we go back to what we said before, where it's sort of everybody, every man for himself, which they said specifically it would not be that way, but we all know where that is now.
Ralph Russo, some fascinating conversation. Ralph, thank you for your time. Be well.
Thanks, Paul.
The AP's college football editor, Ralph Russo. We will take a break, get some reaction to that. We'll go to Oklahoma a little bit later on and talk to one of our regular guests from out there on how they're viewing it from the Big 12. And we're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
David is up next as we continue here. David in Alabama. Hello, David. David, you there? I did not hear David. How about Dan? We'll try Dan. Hello, Dan.
Thanks, Paul, as always.
Thank you.
Paul, I just want to ask you something. Do you know or have you heard or does anyone even care about the prophylactics and the therapy drugs that are out there? The chloroquine, hydrochloroquine, I don't know if that's the same thing, but the erythromycin, doxycycline, and there's another one, but these drugs are showing amazing results. Some say dramatic results, and no one's talking about them.
Well, I think about 2 months ago, the president talked a great deal about hydrochloroquine. He, in fact, took it for 2 weeks. He was widely chastised by epidemiologists who said that the drug is not safe, nor is it suitable. But I can assure you, my understanding of pharmaceuticals is minuscule.
Right, but you know, they say the science, the experts, the information I got was from a guy, Harvey Rich, R-I-S-C-H, he's a professor at Yale, mm-hmm. And then five other studies that were, you know, independent studies.
Well, listen, Dan, whether all of this works or not, I mean, there are some treatments currently being distributed for seriously ill people that are shortening the illness and are successful. These are drugs that are available in hospitals as long as it's available. And obviously vaccines are being worked on worldwide around the clock. I don't think any of that is going to really have an impact on where we are here in this conversation.
Right, but wouldn't it be a good idea if you could take something that would
Dan, let me I'll give you some limited understanding of drugs. I have taken very little medicine in my life, fortunately. But have you ever are you on any regular prescriptions?
Yes.
Okay. When you get that prescription, does your doctor advise you how to take it and what to be careful about?
Oh yeah.
Well, that's the problem. I had surgery a couple of months ago, and they gave me a whatever it was prescription, and I fared far worse from the drugs than I did from the surgery. I mean, the drugs nearly killed me. The surgery was not a big deal. You better be careful if you take something without understanding the side effects. And I think the biggest issue on hydrochloroquine is if you have any heart trouble at all, it can kill you.
Right. Well, I've heard that, you know, and I know that they warned of it, but, you know, these studies,
I think remdesivir is the best, that's what they're giving to acute patients. And by the way, I know people that have taken hydroxychloroquine, and a friend of mine who's an epidemiologist, he had COVID. He said it didn't help him one bit. But again, those are anecdotal. Nobody needs to be concerned about that unless they're sick.
Right, right. You don't think that they're showing that it works as preventatives. And
Dan, I'm just really not qualified to offer an opinion. If somebody, I know one thing, if I was in a hospital dying, and somebody said, would you take on the risk of taking this drug? I would say, sure. What do I have to lose? Other than being in critical condition, I wouldn't take it.
Yeah, I understand that. Would you tell Legend to kiss the ring?
I will.
And LSU was a great.
You're right. You can legitimately tell him to kiss the ring this time around. Hey, thanks for the call, and appreciate it. We are going to grab one more caller here because we've gone really long with the interview there. Jax is in Texas, and you're on the air. Yeah. Hello, Jax.
Yeah, Paul. Hello. I'll make this quick. I just wanted to question the premises of Wallace's call a little while ago, him preaching from the pulpit of at least being agnostic or likely atheist, and wondering why people would have that type of faith, you know, in something they can't see, feel, or touch, or, you know, something that's tangible, how a person can feel that way. I would put forth this question to him. If he has a family, say he has a mother, a wife, a daughter, a son, a brother, whatever, and ask him if he loves whoever he cares for most in his family, say it's his mother. I'll ask him, do you love your mother? What's he going to say? 99 times out of 100, yes, I do. I love my mother. I'll ask him to prove it. Prove it with the scientific method. He can't do it. So, you know, it's just a matter of faith. You can call it faith in God. You can call it love when you love someone else. You can't prove it, but you just know it's there. And that's what I'd like Wallace to consider.
Thank you, Jack. I really appreciate you sharing that.
People, you know.
Thank you very much. We're up against a break. I don't mean to run here, but that was a very important message. We will head out to Oklahoma in a few minutes. Continue with your phone calls the rest of the way as we continue here on a Monday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
We welcome you back. A very busy show already. Pat Forte joining us from SI, giving us his take, just like you just heard a minute ago, from Ralph Russo. Also, a little bit of a recruiting update from Tom Luganville about especially Alabama's resurgence. I mean, that should not come as any surprise that Alabama's doing well in recruiting, but they started very slow. But many people have wondered, you know, what happened when Nick Saban figured out a way to deal with Zoom calls. And they also have brand new facilities, which many people are crediting with helping to attract the elite athlete. Barry Trammell joining us from the Oklahoman. He's one of the leading columnists in the Big 12 and around the country. And we've talked to him many times in recent months. Barry, thanks for the time. And it's really great to have you back on the program. And I know you have probably already blocked out a room and are heading over to the stadium on week zero to watch the Sooners play. I think it's Missouri State. I could be wrong. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
We're doing okay.
We've got our first game a week earlier than we thought in Oklahoma. So, you know, a week ago, just a few days ago, we're gearing up for college football, and Oklahoma State didn't know who it was going to play in its season opener, and Oklahoma didn't know when it was going to play. And neither concern was the biggest concern of anybody on the 2020 schedule. That's how screwed up this season is.
Yeah, I mean, I think I understand, but considering where we are right now, and nobody knows exactly where that is, can you explain Oklahoma's rationale behind moving this game up?
I can, and it's purely trying to get put itself in as good of a competitive situation as possible. The Sooners were scheduled to play Missouri State on September 5th, Tennessee on September 12th, and Army on September 26th. With all the COVID stuff, if you move Missouri State, if the NCAA allows you to move Missouri State to August 29th, that gives the Sooners an open date before games 2 and games 3, so that if there's any kind of COVID problems or outbreak with testing or positive tests, they've got extra wiggle room to try to get guys back. It's nothing more than that. It's just 2 weeks before they have to play Tennessee. So I don't know if anything like that will be needed. You know, I guess the standard quarantine is 14 days. Does that mean you can play 14 days after the 29th or 13 days? I don't know how you fudge those numbers, but that's really what it's all about, just giving themselves an extra week for COVID purposes before Tennessee.
And listen, it makes perfect sense, but let's get to the real question of the hour. What's going on with the Big 12? They seem to be the most aggressive, not by much, but they seem to be the most aggressive of the Power 5 conferences. What are you hearing around in and around Oklahoma and elsewhere in terms of what they think is realistic, forgetting the schedule, of course? What's happening right now?
Well, I think they are sort of presenting an optimistic front, knowing full well there's no way they're going to get in 12 games. I mean, it's literally, what's today, July 27th. It's July 27th, and Oklahoma State literally does not have an opponent for its season opener after Oregon State canceled. So if you want to play 12 games, you better have 12 opponents. Oklahoma State doesn't even have that. So I think they just want to put on an air of optimism, knowing that a conference-only or maybe a conference-only plus one format might be the best-case scenario. Just trying to delay the decision, much like the SEC, just give themselves as long as possible to have as much information before they decide what to do. The news out of baseball this morning, of course, is not going to help anybody. The NBA has a bubble. Nobody else has a bubble. Without the bubble, it's going to be hard to keep the trains on schedule.
And let me focus in on that, because it did seem like the Major League Baseball announcement, and now there's another announcement that's come out that I think it's the White Sox is isolating. I mean, these are stories you expect, but optically, what does that story mean, especially if it gets worse to college football?
Well, it's got several factors I see, and one is, of course, early in the pandemic, this was a largely big urban problem: New York, Seattle, the Northeast. But now it's spread throughout the South: Oklahoma, Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, Georgia, Florida. They all got massive case problems. But also coming to issue is the realization that we still have a lot of testing problems, and a lot of people can't get tests back in quick form. What's the point of getting tested if you got to wait 14 days before you get your results back? And if organizations like Major League Baseball or the NFL or the NBA or college football, if they can all of a sudden get a lot of tests back quickly, that's bad. That's bad form. It's not necessarily true, but it looks bad if we're hoarding tests so that we can play some ball games. And to me, that's one of the issues with getting this season off and running and staying on schedule. So I'm more pessimistic than ever about college football, at least this fall.
And I know that that is not an unusual or a unique approach, Barry, but I think it's difficult when you juxtapose what you said, which represents a lot of people in your industry, versus the optimism that we hear. I mean, Bob Bowlesby saying today, well, you know, we knew we were going to have to react to disruptions. Other commissioners saying the same thing. At some point, these trains seemingly are going to collide. I'm curious, when do you think that is going to be, and what will the result be after that happens?
Well, for the last month or so, we've been hearing July 31st in our part of the country is when they really have to decide. Now, if you decide you're going to go ahead and play, that means, you know, something else could happen. You're not deciding to that you'll automatically get to play 12 games. So, you know, to me, the thing to look for is the end of the week, which will be at the end of the month. And if there's an announcement, hey, we're forging ahead, then I think what you have to look for is a fractured schedule, because there will be interruptions. There will be games canceled. There will be games postponed, pushed to the end of the season. You know, if we get to December, there could be, you know, TCU could play nine conference games. Iowa State could play six. Georgia could play eight conference games. LSU could play five. I mean, to me, it's just you're headed for really a mess of a schedule. And I don't know how they plan to react to it. They don't know what to react to yet. So, to me, the end of the week, we'll find out whether we're really going to try this. And if we do, then get ready for chaos.
We're talking here as two people that cover college football, and we don't need a dummy's guide to college football to know why this is going on. I mean, you cover two of the biggest and successful programs on the map. But at some point, do you think someone is going to say, why are we doing this? And can someone out there give us a reasonable explanation other than the money?
I doubt it. Probably not in my neck of the woods, and probably not in yours.
No, I didn't think so.
So probably not. I do think there are some level-headed people, though, particularly at OU, where Lincoln Riley and Joe Castiglione have been sort of out front about coronavirus caution. So, you know, it would not surprise me that if in Big 12 meetings, if Oklahoma is saying, listen, let's rethink this thing. And if enough people say that, then I think, you know, I could see them maybe reversing and maybe trying a spring situation. But unless two or three prominent voices, like an Oklahoma, an Alabama, a Georgia, whoever in the SEC, without individual school leadership, I don't think it will happen. The money is too great and people need to play. So unless those schools step out and do that, then that's what it's going to take, is two or three schools stepping out.
Barry Trammell from the Oklahoma. Thank you, Barry. I really appreciate the honesty and always the perspective. You be well.
Okay, Paul. See you later.
Great to have you on. Always a fantastic guest. And we've been through a number of really good guests today. We're going to take a break. Plenty of time for you to react. We have not had that much time in the last hour, but the rest of the way, it's going to be all yours at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And we welcome you back, and really glad that you are here. Let's continue with more phone calls and check in with Jason. Oh, I got to hit this reset here, but Jason is up next as soon as I can make Jason magically appear on my screen. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Paul.
Good afternoon.
Hey, I got actually I got a second thing I thought about while I was on the phone, but the first thing is I got to respond to your earlier caller, Joe. He kept telling everybody he's 75 years old and he's seen everything and he's never seen a country shut down. Well, I beg to differ. Pretty much in the entire European continent and New Zealand shut down, and I've been watching sports with people in the stands in those countries for a couple of weeks now, and they have virtually zero positive COVID tests. Because they shut down. They actually shut down. They didn't do what we did, kind of a, excuse my language, a half-assed point of view of shutting down. So in any case, that's it. That's what I got to say about that. The other thing is I, as a college football fan, I find that they're kind of spoon-feeding us and slowly getting us ready for cancellation, because they kind of keep pushing everything back. They kind of keep, well, we're going to do this. Oh, we're going to, oh, we'll take away these games. We'll keep doing this. Oh, we'll get, and it seems like they're kind of priming the pump for the final.
But hey, Jason, remember the preamble to every comment from a college leader, the most important thing is the safety of our student athletes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, and like I said, I love this stuff, man, but that's kind of my perspective too, is the safety part of it.
And, well, and yes, I mean, you're right. And I think Greg Sankey was pretty honest when he was here 2 weeks ago. He said, we're going to monitor the public health part of the equation. The public health part of the equation is not great. I think that's an understatement, but
right.
The overriding factor, I think, are a number of things. And we've had three guests today, and they've all mentioned the MLB card.
Right.
College football needs Major League Baseball to be successful.
Absolutely. And I kind of had a conversation with my son this morning. He's a high school athlete, you know, lost out on his baseball season. He's working out for football right now, but that's in jeopardy. We're in California. They're not going to play.
No.
And what I told him is I said, what's the difference between a 22 to 25 year old pro baseball player making a mistake and those guys all testing positive now? And the disturbing part is Don Mattingly is admitted they all knew that they tested positive. They had a meeting with the players and they went forward with playing last night.
I mean, that is so outrageous.
Exactly. And so my question is though, Paul, is with a baseball manager dealing with pros, having that meeting, what's to say that there's some, you know, a college coach that's on the verge of a quote bowl eligible season, and oh boy, we got, you know, half the offensive line tested
Jason,
positive, but we got
you
a
and I you
week.
And I know the answer to that already, and I know some people
absolutely.
Will say, are you, I mean, they'll disregard it, because I know people inside the industry right now, and I'm speaking of college football, who are laughing at this virus.
Absolutely. Oh no, they again, you hear it all day on your show, Paul. I love your show, but half the callers call up and say 18 to 25 year olds aren't going to die. Well, absolutely they're not going to die, but
no.
They're going to kill their grandpa. They're, you know, when
You're
they
right.
shake your
You're
hand
right.
to do an interview,
right.
they're going to make you sick. You know, come on now. We got to
yeah,
think
and,
about
and
the
and
whole.
I'm talking about listen, I'm not going to right now, let's see where we go, but there are some scary stories inside the sport right now, And I will readily admit, even when you hear of these 30, 40, 50 players, I haven't heard of one that's been seriously ill, but you don't know who else is getting it, though. And that's exactly right. Hey, thank you. Great call. Hope your son gets to play some ball. We are heading to a break, another hour to go, and more of your phone calls when we come back.